If you've been told to pull up your socks, then make sure it's a pair of TNT socks. The TNT shop is now open at TNTRadio.live. This is the Chris Smith Show on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
G'day, g'day. Welcome to the program. It is good to have your company on this Friday afternoon, our last time together for the week, broadcasting live from Sydney in Australia, wherever you're listening from, whether it's something where you're cold or hot or it's dark, you're very much part of the program. We appreciate your company and we want to make sure that you are part of it. We're on the brink of another weekend and, of course, don't we love another weekend? But it's interesting, always on a Friday, and those of us in a media kind of industry always see this, that Thursday and Fridays tend to be rapid-fire news and current affairs days. So there's, you know, unlimited material to pick from, and that's exactly what the case is today. From the top, I want to break down these latest Australian immigration numbers, which shows that the federal government has basically lost control of the country. They've lost control of who comes into the country, whether they're coming in illegally or legally, because most of the talk is that there are fake visas being handed out willy-nilly and the federal government can't stop it. And as for being a soft touch, why is it that we allow record numbers of people in when we've got to give people jobs, when we've got a cost of living crisis and we've got a housing crisis? This is the worst time to let in record numbers of immigrants. The worst time for so many economic reasons. We'll talk about this in the program today. And I'll tell you what Pauline Hanson said yesterday. If you missed that interview, that's a pity. She spoke directly at immigration, as she has done throughout her political career, and spoke about the record numbers that we simply cannot sustain. And I've got some statistics that you'll find interesting. How many houses are being built and how many new people are coming in? How many do you think that is? Say, for instance, we built, let me just grab a number, 100,000 new houses in Australia. How many people are coming in? Double that? Three times that? Well, I'll tell you the exact ratio in just a second. We've got three fabulous guests on the program, which is what we do almost each and every day, except for really busy days when we've got much more than three, including a man who hasn't done a media interview for a very, very long time. Emeritus Professor Robert Clancy, he will join me on the program. He is the man who knows more about coronaviruses than just about anyone else in Australia. But ever since the pandemic began, what happened? He issued a number of warnings about vaccines. He issued a number of warnings about lockdowns, and no one wanted to listen to him. Even more than that, he was ostracized. He was cancelled. This guy is an emeritus professor in this area. He was cancelled. His advice was ridiculed by government. And I will speak to him today about why that happened. Robert Clancy, he uses the word shameful quite often to refer to Australia's management of COVID-19. Still on COVID, one of the GPs who was unbelievably disbarred from practice in her suburban Sydney surgery because she prescribed the treatment ivermectin, which is an effective treatment for COVID-19 symptoms. That was Dr. Miley Trinh. And I've had Dr. Miley Trinh on the program a number of times this year, last year. Well, Miley had a ruling handed down today in a Sydney appeals court. And she will join me next hour on the program to bring us the very latest on her attempts to return to practicing medicine and, more than that, seeking justice for her unfair exclusion. Can you believe that we continue this malicious stuff against those who used effective medicines for this kind of ailment? Now, the reason the government's all cracked down on ivermectin is that because they didn't want to hear about treatments. They wanted to make sure that we put money into the coffers of Pfizer and Moderna. That was their number one priority. That was more important, getting as much money as possible into their pockets. And so therefore, if we had effective treatments, which we had, well, we had to ban those because people would prefer to stick with a treatment than a vaccine and an injection. So we couldn't have treatments. We had to find a way to besmirch the reputation of those treatments. That's exactly what happened. It was criminal. It was corrupt. That's what happened in countries like Australia. So we'll cover that when we catch up with Mai Lee very shortly on the program. Also today, John Ruddick's planned COVID debate with Jack the Insider from the Australian newspaper. It took place last night in the New South Wales Parliament House, and I'll replay a slab of this event for you, going head-to-head, John and Jack over COVID. Some interesting news today related to 6G mobile technology. Now, remember all the kerfuffle about health fears related to 5G? Look, I've seen two studies, one from 2018 and one from 2016, that tells me that they were exaggerated. However, when it comes to 6G, as you'll hear a little bit later in the program, there is every reason to have fears about the health concerns related to 6G, and I'll explain that to you a little bit later. And the former nighttime radio champ, the most politically incorrect man in all the Southern Hemisphere, Jim Ball, is on deck today, and he's got a few wet raspberries to hang out. What do you do with it? Oh, you blow out, right? Wet raspberries. All right. He'll blow out a raspberry to the ABC. He'll blow out a raspberry to the CSIRO. They need it. And raspberries to those politicians who love to stick their snouts in the trough. And I make mention of that because the latest news out of the New South Wales Parliament is that the Labor government spent, this is amazing, $24 million in 6 months on staff, on travel, on stationery and office supplies. $24 million in 6 months, not 12 months. That's $133,000 per day. What? At least they're good at something. They know how to spend. A spending spree and a half. Anyway, busy program today, but of course, it doesn't matter how busy we are. We will take you as a caller as our priority, and you can jump on our talkback lines right away. You can be part of the conversation no matter who I am speaking with. You can do so from the United States or Canada on 1-888-201-6425. From the UK, 033-0024-1026. And from Australia or New Zealand, 1-800-670-310. Let's get into this. On this Friday, you're with Chris Smith, broadcasting live on the global news talk network, TNT.
Abroad or at home, this is your news.
By staying silent, we are part of the problem.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Well, the latest immigration numbers splashed on the front pages of Australian newspapers today. They are nothing short of destructive. Destructive in so many ways. And I think it might be time that Australians kicked up a gigantic stink over this. It is a path to chronic social problems, as if we don't have enough of that already. It's a cynical effort to pump up the federal budget. In other words, make the government look better than it actually is. And it's the best way to deny Australians a job. We know that for sure. Let's look at the key raw data for a second. These are record immigration figures for January. Record. And I'll explain why they're a record in just a second. They've been described by various commentators today as a disaster for families. And it is that and more. According to the Australian Bureau of Statistics, yesterday, the Australian Labor government brought in a record 125,410 permanent and long-term arrivals. This is over the 31 days of January, and that works out at more than 4,000 per single day. 4,000 per single day. As the Telegraph pointed to today, even accounting for departures, the net increase of 55,330 was the highest January intake ever recorded in the history of this nation. We are going berserk at opening the door for others. Now, the paper spoke with entrepreneur and adventurer Dick Smith, who I've spoken to on the program about this subject before. And Dick has always argued that anything above a very generous 75,000 people per month is unsustainable. Well, we almost doubled that. In fact, we did. In fact, as he said, if immigration continued at current levels, Australia's population would reach 100 million by the end of the century. 100 million by the end of the century. A couple of other stats. Australia's net migration intake soared to a record high of 510,000 in the year to July 2023. That is double pre-pandemic levels. So that is double the norm. What we've been used to prior to the upheaval of COVID. What is wrong with this government? Why would they do such a thing? Now, I saw an article this week saying that in 2024, it is the worst time in Australian history to be a renter. And is it any wonder? They're competing against almost all of those 4,000 new entrants per day for very limited rental properties. That is a massive number of competitors lining up outside of the rental property saying, I'll pay more. Now, I spoke with One Nation Senator Pauline Hanson about this very issue yesterday on the show, just before the release of those numbers. This is what she said.
It's over the top now. Apart from what they're bringing in the country, and it's about a million people, because we've got over 750,000 foreign students in the country. That's on top of the others that we have with the migrants coming in. So you just, we can't cope with it. That's why the housing shortages in most of the states, your housing rental accommodation is less than 1%. We haven't got the housing for people. We haven't got the hospitals, nursing homes, schools. Everyone's struggling and it's hard. And the traffic, I'm sick and tired of driving in this horrendous traffic. You're probably laughing at me because it's Brisbane, but it's worse in Sydney, Melbourne. But it's horrendous wherever you go in this country. And I blame the bloody governments for this. This is Labor. It was started under the Liberal Party. Until we get our act together and can provide the infrastructure for our standard of living and decent way of life in this country, don't keep bringing more people into this country.
Well said. Well said. You cannot argue with that. You can argue about whether she likes people from another country or not if you want, if you are still upset at what she said in 1986. But you can't argue with what she's said about infrastructure. It can't keep up with the population we've got now. It's not up to scratch with the population we have now. What happened to the Prime Minister saying in December last year that he intends to halve the annual immigration rate to a sustainable level? That was December. I'm going to halve the immigration rate. Well, wouldn't you think that by January you'd start to see the first inklings of that? No. You've seen a record in Australian history in immigration. I guess it's just like his cutting electricity prices promise. It's all just BS. They say this stuff, but they don't do anything about it. It's all just BS. This government, of course, has two major motivations for having an open-door immigration policy, an unlimited immigration intake, you might say. Yes, like all governments, all of them, the numbers hide the nasty side of an ailing economy. It creates income revenues from tax that make all the numbers look much rosier for pre-election purposes. But in Labor's case, they've got an extra motivation. The powerful left wing of the party, Albo's favourite faction, of course, being a left winger himself, they keep putting pressure on Cabinet, on Albo, to bring in more and be generous to these island hoppers. They've travelled 16 different countries to choose Australia. This is why we're now breaking immigration records. Now, the Telegraph quoted Leith Van Onselen, chief economist at MB Fund, who pointed out that Australia's population grew by a record 680,000 people in 2023, which dwarfed the circa 170,000 homes built over the same period. Let's just get that statistic right for a second. 170,000 homes, but four times the number of people needing homes coming in. Four times without a home. That's what happens when you have no real immigration plan. If you had a decent immigration plan, you'd have all the states on board building the infrastructure to match the ratio of immigrants. But it's nothing like that. It's willy-nilly. There's no coordination. They wouldn't know how to coordinate Mr. Whippy. It exposes the Labor government's reckless approach quite dramatically. Now, the brakes have got to be slammed on these record numbers before our cities of Melbourne and Sydney in particular become strangled by overpopulation and more poverty, ruined by gridlock. It's already happening, and a lack of basic services. If you can't keep your infrastructure up to the current population, why are you bringing in record numbers for it? Makes no sense. It is the cost of finding accommodation which has already begun to ruin lives. You talk to charities, those who have people knocking at the door regularly. You know, you've got young families moving out of rental apartments because they can't pay their rent anymore. They have to rely on charity, on meals to get through the week. It financially cripples young people. And, you know, they're trying to get a start in life. They can't get off their backsides to get a start in life because they can't pay the rent. It's astronomical. That's not the Australia we want. We've got to kick up and scream about this. It is time the children in government stepped aside and we found some adults who knew how to control this because it is well and truly out of control. This is TNT.
TNT's David Curtin.
In my mind, government spending in the UK is absolutely horrendous. It has got completely out of control over the last 14 years of Conservative rule and 13 years before that of Labour rule. You would probably be astounded if you actually knew how much the government spent. In this financial year, these are the figures, the estimate for how much it wants to spend on everything or how much it needs to spend is £1.2 trillion or $1.2 million, if you like, which is an amount of money that we cannot really comprehend.
David Curtin on today's News Talk, TNT. A better business tip from TNT Radio. News Talk radio listeners are some of the most active and involved listeners of any format. TNT radio listeners rely on TNT radio often as their primary source of information. They trust TNT radio and are highly engaged with the content. If you'd like more information about advertising on TNT radio, simply fill out your details on our contact page and we'll be in touch. To find out more, go to tntradio.live. Today's News Talk Radio.
Now we're talking.
TNT.
Yeah, it is TNT. Thank you so much for your company today. There's plenty to get to. I've got the former nighttime radio champ from 2UE and 2GB, the most politically incorrect commentator in the Southern Hemisphere. We're proud to have him on here. Jim Ball, welcome to the program.
Chris, thank you for having me on again. It's been great. It's great to be here.
We love having you regularly, mate, and we get really good feedback, especially on the chat box when people start to follow your arguments. You know, people understand the formation of your arguments better than most. All right, I want to talk about this migration problem or immigration policy.
It's a huge problem.
When are we going to have adults that understand that you can't bring in that many people without having the states on board with infrastructure? You've got to have the left hand knowing what the right hand's doing.
Yeah. Look, I saw this, I've seen this in my own suburb years ago when we came here. It was just an ordinary suburb with freestanding homes, but they've eventually been bought up. And so you've now got, where there were two homes, you've got, say, eight units with, quadruple the number of cars. You can't get a park along the street anymore. There is parking underneath. But look, you could argue about Dick Smith's 75,000. I think that's a bit lame, to be honest. It could be 100,000, could be 250,000, whatever the number. The concern is that it's got to be at a pace, it's got to be at a pace and a rate that the nation can absorb both culturally and economically. There's got to be jobs. Okay, we take some refugees. I think at one point it was 18,000 a year. I don't know what it is now. But that's got to, and they've got to be a fit. Just because they're refugees, they've got to be a fit with the culture and the society.
Yes.
I remember back in my previous life, our previous life, whenever this topic came up, which it did regularly, I used to liken it and still do, so people can get their heads, get visualize the whole thing. It's like running a bath where you get the hot and the cold running, you get the water temperature as you want it to get it to the Goldilocks zone. That's what immigration should be about, getting it to a point where, okay, you're not going to overflow the bath, you're going to get the temperature right, a bit of hot, a bit of cold, a bit more cold, a bit more hot, whatever. The immigration rate and the immigrants have got to be productive. They've got to add something to the to the economy.
Yeah.
They can't just come here and sit on their ass, which I think, and we're seeing it a lot in the West. I mean, it's a big issue in America. I'm not sure about Canada, but Europe. Europe's a lost cause, Chris.
Yeah.
Europe is, and this was forecast back in the Rivers of Blood speech. I'm trying to think, it was April 1968. Can't think of the guy's name, the English politician. But he forecast all of this. It's not. It shouldn't come as a shock or a surprise. And you mix in that the whole notion of multiculturalism. Now, multiculturalism sounds good, but I'm afraid what we're seeing, it doesn't work. As long as, put it this way, it does to an extent, as long as the people coming in are acculturated. Now, of course, the issue of housing prices. I noticed the other day, Wallachia out in Sydney's worth, foothills of the Blue Mountains on the Pean River. The average house price there, the median, is now something like $900,000. So young people, this is Wallachia. Even in my suburb here, I think a unit, two-bedroom unit, $1.5 million. This is a starter for, it used to be these kind of units for people getting on the real estate ladder. I don't know what the answer is except for the government to just, and the other thing is, obviously this is the plan. You know, what did we say, 125,000 in January alone. And you got to say, well, I thought, well, maybe January is an outlier. But if this is the plan, what is the criteria? Who signed off on it? I mean, that's what we need to know. Are they like the Democrats in America? Are they importing a voter base? Is that what it's about?
Oh, there's no doubt about
getting people on social security, and they'll always vote for Labor.
And this has been Labor's DNA, Jim. You know that.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Look, there was an interesting article today. I think this might have been the Australian, or was it in the Telegraph article? Following World War II, Australia was undersupplied in terms of labour and creativity. We had too few people to satisfy demand. During that era, Australia struck a fine balance between immigration and our ability to accommodate new arrivals. That sometimes elusive balance has since been our national plan. Presently, however, the numbers on each side of that ledger are entirely out of whack. And that's true. And there was another, I thought, telling piece. Daniel Wilde in the telly, Deputy Executive Director of the Institute of Public Affairs, he warned that immigration has played a critical role and will continue to, but it must be planned for, running the bath and all of that. Otherwise, the immense pressure on house prices, rent, schools, roads, hospitals will only get worse. For the first time in 40 years, per capita GDP has gone down for four consecutive quarters. Yeah. Australians at an individual level are in recession. So that's where we're at. Mm. And you don't hear, okay, there's a lot of noise in the Telegraph. We're talking about it. People see it. They live it daily with hospitals, schools, parking, traffic, all the rest of it. Pauline Hanson talking about traffic. They see it. They live it. But the government, they're totally unresponsive. So who the hell are they pandering to? Yeah, I don't know.
You talk about the fact that, you know, you've got to have the hot water and the cold water, and I like the analogy, but I don't think there's too much, too much due diligence and too much duty of care with the numbers that are coming in. This seems to be just open the gates and let them all in.
Well, same. Look, this is a global phenomenon, and you think, well, is this part of the world, what's it called, the WEF, the World Economic Forum? Is this part of their plan?
Yeah.
A club for Rome, Club of Rome, and all that stuff?
Yep. It's playing out that way.
And then you hear yourself talking about this, and you think, God, I'm sounding like a conspiracy theorist. But there's something going on. Mm. There is something. And what that does to the culture and the economy, of course, but the society and the culture, and we'll come to TikTok, I hope, because that's explosive stuff.
Yeah, we'll get to that. Why don't we do that right now while we're talking about that? Yep. The US is trying to have TikTok sold. They're trying to keep TikTok out of mainstream. What is that about, and why are they so, bolshy about all of this?
Well, might have been last week, I mentioned this new book by Peter Schweitzer.
Yeah.
He's the guy that lifted the lid on the Biden corruption back in 2018. And his new book is called Blood Money, where he devotes an entire chapter to TikTok and how it's being used by the CCP to undermine the West. Now, in a nutshell, Chris, TikTok is digital WMD. It's a weapon of mass destruction. Doesn't look like it. It's very friendly, smiley, and all the rest of it. It is a psycho-digital virus, as Schweitzer describes it. He calls it, TikTok is a digital dopamine super machine. And just think about that. You've got a weapon of mass destruction. It's on just about every mobile device in the country, not on mine, but I don't know about you, but kids particularly. They're all over it. They are addicted to it.
Yeah.
The CCP has researched this. Some of the stuff is just, it's staggering what they've so far ahead of the West, and the West is so stupid, naive, gullible, fat, and lazy. We just don't understand. Schweitzer describes it. He says TikTok is a dagger pointed at the heart of our children, hidden behind the smile of TikTok. So they're not after you and me. We're too old and cynical to fall for it. But they're after our kids. Well, my kids are 40 and 37, but their grandkids for sure. And what we as the West see as just a fun social media app, the CCP, they see its deployment very, very differently. They've got a TikTok equivalent in China, but it's not used the way, it's not allowed to be used. Kids are allowed so many minutes a day on this app. Then it's bedtime, as it were, not bedtime physically, but once you've done your limit of time. And they deploy it differently in China than they do in the West. They see TikTok as part of their armory in the war against the West, with the aim of subverting society and culture without firing a shot. Now, I want to come to something in a minute that I wrote earlier this week. Pardon me. It even got published in The Australian, believe it or not.
Right.
Now, the Chinese are playing a long game. And as I said, they're after our grandkids and our kids. The double, triple bottom line here, though, is that we are at war, and it's a war for the hearts and minds of the people, and we aren't even aware we're at war and that war has been declared on us. TikTok is, as I said, digital WMD, and it's part of what China calls their cognitive warfare against the West, right? Again, without firing a shot. It's to demoralize, change the culture, get kids thinking differently.
Yeah.
It's the perfect weapon. It is, when you think about it, and it occurred to me earlier this morning when I was putting this down, it is basically the perfect digital Trojan horse. It is a Trojan horse.
Yes, it's like a subconscious form. Trojan horse.
That's exactly right. What it is. Now, Schweitzer, listen to this bit. In the book, he says, according to the Chinese propaganda ministry, the algorithm that powers TikTok has the same source code as apps offered in mainland China that are used to control and monitor the domestic population. Their powerful algorithm, designed to keep audiences glued to their phones, is not only a company secret, it is also a state secret. The Chinese government has designated it as a national security asset. I hope people are starting to understand the contours of the land here, what we're dealing with. One TikTok user in Texas, and I just threw this in there from the Schweitzer book, posted a clip playing China's national anthem called President Xi, My President. The number of his fans spiked from 2,000 to nearly 90,000. And another leading Chinese PLA strategist, Zhang Hufeng of the National University of Defense, wrote of a cognitive or mind war on the United States and the West, and proposed how to win without firing a shot. He says Beijing must use information and popular spiritual and cultural products as weapons to influence people's psychology, their will, their attitude, behavior, and even change the ideology, values, cultural traditions, and social systems. According to Zhang, these cultural tools include apps and video games. So there's more. In the tradition of Sun Tzu, you know, he's the military historian or military.
The art of war.
Yeah, that's it. The ultimate goal is to manipulate a country's values and achieve strategic goals without an actual overt military battle. So,
like a Trojan horse.
It is. It's a digital Trojan horse, and I'm just looking for that piece I wrote earlier in the week. I'll find it.
Okay, you have a look. I've got to go to some news, and I'll come back after the news break, and we'll get that from you. We'll take a break right now, come back with Jim Ball. Interesting conversation about the attack on TikTok, and maybe it's exactly the way Jim paints it. We'll take a break, get some news right here at TNT.
Now, TNT Radio News.
Show them how it's done.
Let's go.
I got news for you.
News.
Matt Boyland here with a look at your TNT headlines. French President Emmanuel Macron has warned Europe must prepare for war with Russia if it wants peace.
We must say that we are ready to respond. We must not be weak. The time has come for us to resist.
US Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer has taken aim at Israeli leader Benjamin Netanyahu, calling for snap elections to replace the Prime Minister. And Beijing has slammed Washington's plan to ban TikTok of the US, saying such a move would violate international trade rules.
On air and on the app.
I listen on the app.
Stay up to date around the clock.
I listen, therefore I know.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Jim Ball, how did you go finding that?
No, Chris, it doesn't matter. I'll come back to it later if I can find it.
All right, no problem. I want to talk about the Queensland poll that I saw today in the Courier Mail.
Yeah.
I said when Stephen Miles was given the deputy leadership and not that, I can't remember the name of the woman that should have got it. It would have been a great clean slate for Labor. But they went with Stephen Miles, who was attached to Anastasia Palaszczuk with an umbilical cord. It looks as if that umbilical cord is still in place, at least in the eyes of Queensland voters.
Well, 7 months to the next election. So similar to the American election, that's in 8 months. So it's going to be October, November, huge. In fact, in the same week, October 26, November 3, I think it is. But if the LNP can hold it together, it would seem they're on a glide path to victory. These polls on Labor, they are devastating. Seems to be an it's time factor in play.
Yeah.
And once you're caught in that electoral quicksand and you start to struggle and you start to fight more and you start to compound your errors, it just gets worse. And I'm sure they're thinking now, what the hell do we have to do? Because, and just on the numbers, the raw numbers, in October 2020, the LNP's primary vote was 35.9, okay?
Yep.
Park that one. Labor was 39.6. As of this week, the polling indicates that the Libs are on up 6.1 at 42. So they were 35.9, now on 42. Labor was on 39.6, they're now on 30. But, here's the but. Sounds pretty good, but. Always a but. The Greens primary in 2020 was 9.5. It's now up 3.5 to 13. So in a full preferential two-party preferred vote, Labor is still in with a chance because we can only assume that those Green votes, that increase, they are disaffected Labor voters. Call it what you like, but on the raw primary numbers, it's a landslide, it's a rout, it's a bloodbath, it's existential, whatever, it's ugly. And as for Stephen Miles, his polling is the worst for a Queensland Premier since Campbell Newman's. There's only been one since Campbell Newman because it was Newman, then it was Palaszczuk. At his nadir, it was 35. Miles is three above that on 38. And on the question, do you think Labor deserves to be re-elected or time given to someone else?
Yeah.
26% said they deserve to be re-elected. 58% said it's time. And there was another percentage there that didn't know. And it's interesting, an interesting stat from, I think, in the Australia Today about this. Labor has held power. You don't realize it until you actually see it on a page.
Yeah.
They've held power for 30 of the last 35 years.
Yeah, massive.
You just don't think, my God. But that makes sense, Chris, because they have been around and the political makeup of the Queensland government has only changed 7 times since the First World War. So Labor is... it's quite obviously, or it seems to me at least, that Labor is the natural political party for Queensland. I mean, it was, when you think about it, under the tree of knowledge out at Barkhalden where the Labor Party was established with the Shearer strike back in, I think it was 1890, 1891, something like that. Don't know where my mute button is, otherwise I'll clear my throat.
The old mute button. Well, mate, I'll tell you what, you've
That's
just
right,
got
I'm
this
fine.
New microphone, haven't you, right?
Yeah.
Okay,
I know where it is. No, I've just got to, anyway, I'm fine now, so don't worry.
Okay, all right. Because it's on your microphone, there's a little button that if I press it here, you can.
Yeah.
And you can hear me, you see?
Yeah, got it.
Got it?
Yeah, I did notice the other day. But anyway, look, I'll worry. Now's not the time to let's get on with it.
Oh, when all I, right, what, Chris, I want to talk about.
Before we go on, it wasn't. We're not talking nuclear, are we?
No, not today. No, but if you wanted, you can.
Yeah, there is just one thing. I got confused. I was thinking bloody TikTok and nuclear. I wrote this earlier in the week, and I think this is a slam dunk. In this entire nuclear debate, as it is, Bowen's infantile insistence that a nuclear to get nuclear up and running in 10 years is fanciful. He needs to be reminded that in 1962, JFK said that the United States should commit itself to achieving the goal before the decade is out of landing a man on the moon and returning him safely to Earth. Now, note that word, those words. Before the end of the decade. Now, that was 62, September, I think it was, and we're talking 1969.
Yes, July 21.
Now, that's 7 years, right, to use Bowen's words, literally starting from scratch, right, to get put a man where man has never been before, to quote Superman, to invent technologies and processes that didn't exist, right? Yet he says nuclear power, with known and available technologies, can't be managed in 10 years.
What a defeatist attitude.
Well, it's dumb. You put it up against the moon thing and the fact that nuclear exists already.
Yes.
Has for the last, since God knows when, and he says 10 years. I don't get that. And, of course, we know where they're going to put them, where they should be put, one at Liddell, one at Raring or wherever.
Yes.
The network.
Coal-fired power sites.
Yeah, the grid's already there.
The transmission lines are already able to hook up to it and put it straight into the grid.
Yep. He's a rank amateur, mate.
Yeah, rank amateur big time. And I spoke with Mike Irwin, who I'll play a grab of in just a second. I spoke with Mike Irwin, who was in charge of SMR Technology Company. And he was telling me on Tuesday that they could easily have one up within between 7 and 9 years, an SMR. But the problem is the current red tape that forbids us from doing anything to, you know, use uranium for power. It's just ridiculous. We need to get rid of that before anything. But let's go to that. Let's go to that now.
You can thank John Howard for that.
Yeah, you can thank John Howard for that.
He did the deal with the Greens.
He sure did. Now, the CSIRO has come out today to defend itself against criticism from Peter Dutton, the opposition leader, about its various reports done on nuclear. It has so been negative about the price of nuclear. It's been so negative about it. And the industry has said, well, hang on a minute, you haven't spoken to credible experts. You haven't done the right and crunched the right numbers. They've been under all sorts of criticism over what they've come up with in terms of nuclear, which is why Peter Dutton said what he did this morning. And then the CSIRO has come out trying to say, oh, well, I back my scientists, etc. Well, there's not a nuclear power scientist employed by the CSIRO. Let me state that fact for starters. And let me go back to Tony Irwin, who spoke to me on Tuesday. This is what he had to say about the CSIRO reports into nuclear power. Here he is. Have a listen.
The reactor they looked at was the wrong reactor. They quoted figures that were absurdly off. You know, they've been challenged in every public inquiry ever since on nuclear. But all they've done ever since is to cost escalate that 16,000 per kilowatt figure. Now, this year, they thought, oh, we've really got it this time, because here's a project in the US that's been cancelled. And we've got figures that absolutely demonstrate it's too expensive, but they've done a big miscalculation on those figures. And what we've said to them is, please get somebody who knows nuclear to have a look at your figures before you issue the final report this year, because it is way out.
There you go. This is a bloke who's worked in the industry since 2012.
Yeah. Look, do you remember when back in 2020, the Hunter Biden laptop emerged, right? Now, there is a connection here. In October, just weeks out from the election, the Biden campaign, they got 50 intel officers to sign a public announcement saying that it was Russian disinformation. Now, of course, anyone paying attention knew, and if they'd read the Peter Schweitzer book, his name again, they would have known, I knew, the Bidens were totally corrupt, knew about all these deals. And that was before, I knew about that in 2018. So I mentioned that in the context of this propensity by governments, politicians, to harness the authority of scientific bodies to prosecute their agenda.
Yeah.
So in that case, it was intel officers with credentials. In the case of the nuclear costings, it was the CSIRO. It's part of the same tactic, harnessing authority to support and the support of the CSIRO to buttress and a firewall, if you like, the position of the government. What is the CSIRO doing involving itself in energy cost modelling anyway?
Yeah.
What that's not their wheelhouse, as it were.
That should have been given to the Productivity Commission.
Yeah, well, you lift the ban on nuclear and then you let the market decide. I mean, just as Elon Musk has got himself involved in rocketry, and he's not the only one. I mean, there's other private, but he's the main one now, X. You let the market decide, well, okay, lift the ban. And if the market thinks there's a dollar in it, they'll do it.
Yeah.
If you're spending the government's money, okay, the government, as you say, get the Productivity Commission to do it. But the energy debate already, it's fraught and contentious enough, and it's very, very political. And if the CSIRO wants to get down and dirty and involve themselves in a political campaign, which they have, then they can expect some pushback. We have the BOM, the Bureau of Meteorology. They've already politicized. They've been politicized by this convenient, what they call temperature homogenization, where they lower temperatures from 100 years ago by a few degrees, which makes today's temperatures look warmer. Nice trick. It's real pea and thimble stuff. It really is. But so that's where we're at. That's this harnessing of authority, whether it's intel officers or the CSIRO.
Yep.
And it's purely to firewall government's position.
Correct, and that's exactly what the CSIRO are doing, and they should be ashamed of themselves.
Absolutely.
Two quick ones before I let you go. These New South Wales ministers spending money on offices, on all sorts of. I think it's $23 million over 6 months on new staff and et cetera, et cetera. I thought they were trying to rein in the costs, Chris Minns, the Premier, but that's okay, but it doesn't apply to him.
Seems like it. But we shouldn't be surprised. They all go in there saying, well, you look at Albanese, we're going to govern from the middle and we're going to have the adults back in the room. That was a Biden quote. Well, how did that go? It's just ridiculous. And the same thing here. You know, we're going to curb the spending and this profligacy of the previous government, blah, blah, blah. They just don't seem to have any sense of self-awareness.
Nah.
Now, okay, I don't think Chris Minns picks up the phone and books the painters and the carpet people, or in that other one about the 23,000 K for a beachside retreat. Down on the south coast somewhere, I think. They don't involve themselves at that granular level. but it's the public servants that do it, but it's the politicians have got to wear the opprobrium of the community.
They do. Very quickly, the ABC didn't look too flash with some radio ratings in Sydney and in other places in Australia yesterday.
Yeah, the ABC radio audience, it slipped in every capital city, Chris. Would seem their halcyon days are in the rear vision mirror and fading into the distance.
Yeah.
And why would that be, do you think? Well, the first thing with radio, as with any product, is to target it at the market. You give the listener, in this case, or the consumer, a compelling reason to select your product. Mm. Now, the problem for the ABC is, one, and I've just made a note here, that although they may derive a great pleasure pushing their, I don't know, their finger wagging and their thin-lipped, narky, narrow agenda on everything from climate to renewables to culture and all the rest of it, and transgender, whatever, it's quite apparent that it's not what the listener wants.
No.
And point two, commercial radio has an economic imperative to serve the listener. The ABC has no such imperative because it's the taxpayers. Whatever happens, ratings, no ratings, so what? Meh, doesn't matter. And point three, the radio and television landscape, as you know, TNT, right? Wouldn't have been around 10 years ago.
No.
Maybe it was. I don't know. But no. that landscape, again, that has changed dramatically beyond recognition with podcasts,
yep,
streaming services, and the listener-viewer loyalty that television and radio used to depend on. It's no longer there.
It's no longer there. Exactly. I've got to run, Jim. I'm running out of time. I've got to fit in some...
And TNT's a standout example of what I'm talking about.
Yep. Yeah, very true. It's fragmenting big time. I've got to leave it there. Jim, thank you very much. You've got to cross plenty of territory, mate. Have a great weekend.
Good. You too, Chris.
Good on you. Jim Ball, good to have him on the program. Got to go to a break. Back with the debate between Jack the Insider and John Ruddick right after this on TNT.
While serving in Vietnam, a grenade took my ability to see. Today, I'm a sculptor, creating new visions. Now, my fingers are my eyes. As a veteran, I know the challenges of life can be great. In my art, turning a lump of clay into something beautiful, that means a lot to me. Life is like that. We each must use what we can to make things better.
DAV helps veterans like Michael get the benefits they've earned. They help more than a million veterans every year in life-changing ways.
Now, I show others how they can create something with their own hands. With support from DAV, more veterans can shape their lives into a thing of beauty. My victory is bringing beauty into the world.
Michael Naranjo, may your victories inspire many more. Support more victories for veterans. Go to DAV.org.
She used to dance and dream of a better life, a brighter future. Today, thanks to Children International and friends like you, she dances for the world. Together, we give children in poverty a chance to set their sights high and achieve their dreams. Learn more about Children International and join us in our life-changing work at children.org today.
This is The Chris Smith Show on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
All right, yesterday in the New South Wales Parliament, last night, as a matter of fact, Joe the Insider, who writes a column in The Australian, took on John Ruddick, MLC, the leader of the New South Wales Libertarians, on a subject called COVID-19. It was an open free-for-all about these issues. They disagree fiercely about most issues related to it, so they decided to have a debate. And this is part of what happened last night at Parliament House.
Surely the dumbest of all matters related to the vax was the insistence that those who had recovered from COVID still had to get vaccinated. Every virologist knows there is no better inoculation than having recovered from the virus naturally. But no. COVID was so serious, you had to keep vaccinating anyway. The vax had become a golden calf. Weak little Omicron arrived in late 2022. It quickly proved to be an excellent natural vaccine, a weaker version of COVID, easy to recover from. It provided natural immunity. Former John Hopkins University Professor of Medicine, Martin McCurry, wrote in the Wall Street Journal recently, public health officials ruined many lives by insisting that workers with natural immunity to COVID were fired if they weren't fully vaccinated. But after 2 years of accruing data, the superiority of natural immunity over vaccinated immunity is clear. By firing staff with natural immunity, employers got rid of those least likely to infect others. It's time to reinstate those employees with an apology. CDC data demonstrates natural immunity was 2.8 times as effective in preventing hospitalisation and 3.3 to 4.7 times as effective in preventing COVID infection compared to vaccination. Public health officials, and I'm still quoting from the Wall Street Journal, public health officials talk about the vaccinated and the unvaccinated. If we really want to be scientific, we should be talking about the immune and the non-immune, end quote. Now, Peter has argued the vaccine did work, but then COVID mutated into Omicron. We got lucky. Flu-like viruses are well known for mutating on an endless and rapid basis. The good thing is once a bad strain does hit, its mutations quite quickly get weaker. So it wasn't luck, it was expected. So we rushed out a vaccine in 7 months for an inherently unstable virus, and soon after it got to market, the virus changed. Surprise, surprise. Dr. Nick Coatsworth said in January 2022 that the fatality ratio of Omicron is likely to be less than influenza and not a particularly bad flu at that. Bill Gates said that a month later, sadly, Omicron is a better vaccine than my vaccines. Now, why would Bill be sad about that? Is he that greedy? Regardless, the madness rolled on. Premier Perrottet in this state declared his government's objective was to crush Omicron. He thought he was Winston Churchill. Okay, so we the health officials, Bill Gates, have told us Omicron's like a good thing. Okay, it's natural immunity. We still have the Premier. He was one of the better Premiers. He says, oh, we've got to crush it. We'll lock down, take the vax. Pfizer saw Omicron dollar signs and declared Omicron, an Omicron vax was being developed, so get ready for your fourth shot. Okay. Now, so the vax did not live up to its marketing. I think we can all agree with that, but I'll be keen to hear what Peter says in a few minutes. But did it do more harm? There has been a 10 to 20% increase in overall fatalities since the vaccination rollout. This is in countries which took a lot of mRNA. Now, what's causing this? Well, it's either harm from lockdowns or it's harm from warp speed vaccines. What makes me suspicious that it is related to the vax is governments are hell-bent on not investigating it. The same governments who told us every life matters now ignore a sustained increase in death. Recently, the Hill newspaper in the US wrote, life insurers have consistently been sounding the alarm over unexpected or excess deaths, which claimed 158,000 more Americans in the first 9 months of 2023 than in the same period in 2019. With the worst of COVID behind us, annual deaths for all causes should be back to the pre-pandemic levels, or even lower because of the loss of so many sick and infirm. Instead, the death toll remains alarming, disturbing, and deserving of urgent attention, according to insurance industry executives. Now, these are the one guys that will not fudge the data. If you're going to pay out a life insurance claim, they're not going to lie to you. Actuarial reports show deaths occurring disproportionately among young working age people. Nonetheless, the CDC has archived its excess deaths webpage stating the data set will no longer be available.
Can you wind up now, please?
Very soon.
Well, your 20 minutes are up and we're really...
Well, hang on. Meredith, I'm on 18 minutes and 15 seconds.
I'm sorry, it's...
Well, you're going from 8:30, but we had a...
Take your 2 minutes.
Another
minute.
No, I'm sorry, I've got 2 minutes. And I'll pause it now, so... As of today, the TGA Vaccine Adverse Events Database has recorded just over 140,000 adverse reactions to COVID vaccines. I had several mates who had concerning heart reactions in the week or two after the COVID vax, but none of them reported it to the database. Reported injuries is always a fraction of the true number, but 140,000 is an alarming baseline. The hysteria was so acute, several public figures ended up in hospital after the vax and said, look, I am vaccine injured, but it's extremely rare. Keep taking them. They were brainwashed. Pfizer conducted trials on their vax, but didn't want that data released for 80 years. But there was a successful FOI request. Remember, Pfizer initially said that there was no adverse reactions? The reaction of they had the placebo group, they had the vax group, the data is increasingly looking very dire for the people who took the vaccines. So I would like to say in conclusion, the worst part of COVID was the alarming apathy of most Australians. The big government central planners will weaponise that apathy and find other ways to lord it over you. COVID was the entree. Global warming is the main meal.
Oh,
there is an acute correlation between those who fell for COVID alarmism and those who have most fallen for global warming alarmism. I want to salute the brave few who resisted the madness. Many did at great cost. Many are still suffering the consequences of lost jobs and broken families, but you've already demonstrated your courage under fire. And even though you've given so much, you've proven to be the wisest amongst us, and we need you to keep fighting. Thank you very much. And that is precisely 20 minutes.
There you go. That's John Ruddock having his say as part of that debate last night. I didn't hear too much debate going on, but I'm sure that Jack had his say as well. Just very briefly, Robert Clancy is an emeritus professor attached to Newcastle University. If the Australian government had taken notice of this man, who knows probably as much, if not more, about coronaviruses than anyone in the country, it would have been a different approach. We would not have been locked down. It was not part of the national pandemic approach. We would also not put all our eggs into the vaccine basket at all. We would have had ivermectin and other treatments at the disposal of health authorities to use on people who thought that they could take advantage of them. And since the pandemic, it's been proven time and time again from data that both those treatments have made an incredible difference to the outcomes of COVID cases. As for excess deaths, he's got a lot to say about that as well. Now, the other person I'm talking to next hour as well will be Miley Trinh, the doctor who during the pandemic prescribed ivermectin. And because of that, she has not worked an extra day as a GP in her suburban surgery. Today, she was in the Court of Appeal. Next hour, she will describe exactly what happened to her today and whether she has any hope of ever going back to the profession she worked so hard to be part of. It is a malicious vendetta against a woman who deserves a lot more than what she's getting at the moment. We'll take a break just very quickly. Thank you, Beryl, for your kind email. Enjoying your show, she said. No, I won't be going back to Sky. Beryl, that's very unlikely to happen. Not surrounding myself in people who basically threw me into the sink. We won't be doing that. Your wonderful commitment to your skill and talent are renewed. Thank you very much. It is. I'm enjoying myself right here at TNT. Thank you.